Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. Steve, or Mr. Jones, as he makes all of us call him, Mr. Jones. He'll be coming into the studio momentarily, the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Route 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. That is our sponsor for today. It's the Steve Jones Show. My name is Chris Elio. I'm filling in for both Mr. Steve Jones, Mr. Jones, and Sean Carey, the incomparable Sean Carey, out on vacation. So I'm in the catbird seat today and for the rest of the week until Friday. Then you'll have another person who can bow to the feet of Mr. Steve Jones. He is the voice of Penn State football, after all. So, you know, he deserves the adulation. If you want to call and bow at the feet of Mr. Steve Jones, you can give him a call, 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. That is the line for you to call and weigh in on the abundance of sports topics that we have going on.
Yeah, we got a few today.
For an August, for mid-August, early August, it's very busy.
Well, there's one person who felt that August was the best month of the year. Of course, then I finally figured it out that the reason that he felt that way is it was because it was the least that was going on. So it was the easiest month. That's why I loved it.
Yeah, it is the least. It's definitely the dead zone, but with the NBA's offseason being what it is and the NFL just never stopping, it seems.
Not the Zach Rosen comments were interesting to Bleacher Report, where he's talking to them, saying, hey, look, a lot of ways, school and football don't mix. They're two full-time jobs. And he said that if you really put stringent SAT standards on for people to get into school, he said, how well would Alabama do? I thought, wow, okay, that's interesting. We have one change in our guest list. Not for today, but for tomorrow.
I heard good things.
We got two guests on tomorrow's show. Spider Caldwell is going to join us for a significant portion of tomorrow's show. Yes, Spider. And also tomorrow, James Franklin. Not the press conference, but James Franklin with us on the show.
The man, the myth, the legend himself.
The head football coach of the Nittany Lions.
Right.
So that's all coming up. Now, today, Neil Kulong. Sound like I'm disappointing the audience.
Oh, no. Neil Kulong's a regular.
And Neil's so good.
He's a regular. You can't, you know.
He is a regular.
It's more of a, another good segment. Nothing to get upset about.
Now, we can do a couple things. I can shift Spider to Thursday.
We're going to plan the show on the air? Is that what we're going
to... Well, might as well. Yeah, because I guess we have a baseball writer tomorrow too, right?
Tomorrow. I have to look at tomorrow's schedule. I got the flurry of texts from Mr. Sean Carey regarding the new guest, the James Franklin specifically, and the excitement surrounding that guest. Let's see what we got here. Paul Hagan, yes. We have Paul Hagan tomorrow as well.
So what we'll do is we'll do Paul Hagan tomorrow, James Franklin tomorrow, and then we'll shift Spider to Thursday.
All righty.
Because Spider and I are not going to just be there for 10 minutes.
Where's Joe Pesci when you need him? Spider.
Yeah. So I think that we'll do that in terms of our scheduling for the week.
Okay.
I was going to put Spider on tomorrow's show, but then James said, no, I can do Wednesday's show. I said, okay, great. So we'll do that and get him on the show. It was either that or one of the Northumberland County commissioners, and I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. All right, so...
Well, we hear enough of them on this station anyway when it's not sports, so, you know.
Like, okay, great.
What, are we going to get Sammy and Rick on here? Is that going to be the new sports show?
That's right. So, well, either them or James Franklin. It just seemed like James Franklin fit our show better.
So. Yeah, I agree. I have to agree with you there. That was a good call.
So he will be on the show tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Very much. They're going to practice tonight. So they will have practiced three times since the press conference. They did not practice on Sunday. But a lot of work has gone in to get them to this point. They've got some depth. They've got a lot of athletes. The conditioning looks great so far. And I think in the first... let's see, when we talk to them tomorrow, they will have, they'll be about 10 days in. I think for 10 days in, they've done about as well as you can ask them to do. For 10 days in. Okay, that's not bad. So that's coming up tomorrow. And, well, it looks like what, Rhys Hoskins is going to play the outfield for the Phillies? And they're going to try to ease him into the lineup that way. Hoskins, good prospect. I like him.
Phillies are all about prospects.
Well, they are.
That's all they got right now.
I understand that, and that's the way it is, you know. But, you know, the part I talk about with prospects is the adjustment process. And guess what? Who are we now seeing that's struggling with an adjustment process? Aaron Judge. What happens is that they get a book on you. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a quarterback, you're a hitter, okay, you're a hockey goalie, you're a point guard. Everybody gets a book on you. And those who have longevity have the ability to adjust back, and that's what Aaron Judge will have to do. He needs to adjust back. For the Phillies and all their young players, that's going to be the key. Mike Gianfranco has to adjust back.
Yes, he does.
Rhys Hoskins, I think, is going to get off to a good start. I wouldn't be surprised. At some point, they're going to get a book on him. He's going to have to eventually adjust back. Might be the middle of next year, whenever, but he's going to have to. And that's just the way it is. You have to adjust back. And... So,
well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I don't know what kind of slump Aaron Judge is in, but he's still hitting two.
He's been benched. So, I mean,
he was benched? I didn't even know about that. That's crazy.
Well, I'm talking like benched in terms of like, hey, why don't you set out a couple games you need to?
Yeah,
he he has not hit well since the All-Star break.
Yeah, that happens. That does happen. I mean, unless your name is Trout, that does happen.
But I'm just saying the reason is because. You get a book. Hey, what's your hot zone, your cold zone? How do we defend them?
Well, there's also the level of, you know, they haven't played this many games. I mean, even in the minors, they don't play this on this intense a level for that long amount of time in the minors. Like, this is, they're in a playoff race, the Yankees.
Right.
You know, that's pressure. That's a whole, it's a combination of a whole bunch of things, I think.
All right. So I'm just saying, everybody needs to adjust, and Aaron Judge is in that process right now.
Yep.
Where they have to, you know, it's. I mean, that's going to be. Let's see. I'm very interested to see, for example, how Dak Prescott plays this year.
Yes.
Because the league will have adjusted to how he plays. You know. So has he looked at that, and has he and Jason Garrett, have they figured out you know, a couple subtle things where they can adjust back, a couple things that people are like, oh, wait, he does that now? Really? That's the way this game is. And it's like that in any sport. Now let's get to the Zach Rosen story. You're going to love this story. Zach Rosen, and I've had a couple of really nice talks with Tom Bradley, not only about his personnel, a few other things, but also about, I've brought up Zach Rosen to him a couple times, and he says, or excuse me, Josh Rosen, and he says, look, Josh can really play. He says, great arm. He says, he's really, really good. But he's also been very outspoken over the years. And he was outspoken in an interview with Bleacher Report, saying that football and school don't go together. He said, look, football and school don't go together, Rosen said. They just don't. Trying to do both is like trying to do two full-time jobs. He is not incorrect about that. There are guys who have no business being in school, but they're here because this is the path to the NFL. There is no other way. And let's face it, not like the NBA. In the NBA, you know, you can go from high school to the pros. In the NFL, there is no way on the planet a high school player could even conceptually think about playing in the pros. You'd be insane. Then there's the other side of it. It says, raise the SAT eligibility requirements. Okay, raise the SAT requirement at Alabama and see what kind of team they have. You lose athletes, and then the product on the field suffers. Now, what do you think Josh Rosen's major is? What do you think his major is?
Economics.
It is. An economics major. Who is entering his junior year at UCLA. And he is focused on the lucrative business of college football, saying there's so much money being made in the sport. He said no one in their right mind should have a football player's schedule and go to school. It's not that some players shouldn't be in school. It's just that universities should help them more instead of finding ways to keep them eligible. Now, that's what one an area around here I've admired so much. I think there's sometimes there's a process where it's loose where you're keeping people eligible, but you're doing it to then buy them a little time so they can get more confidence in school, not to keep them eligible to play. Especially freshman redshirting. It's one thing about freshman redshirting that I felt was really beneficial was it buys you time in school. So you can get the academic house in order without having to play. I know a lot of people want to see, let's see the freshman, because they like something new. I've got that. But the more freshmen you can redshirt, the better. So anytime any player puts into school will take away from the time you put into football. They don't realize that they're getting messed up until it's too late. You have a bunch of people at the universities who are supposed to help you out, and they're way more interested in you staying eligible. See, that's like Todd Kulka. He's interested in you graduating, for example, here at this school. So there's so much money being made in the sport, it's a crime to not do everything you can to help people who are making it for those who are spending it. UCLA, of course, now has a 15-year, $280 million deal with Under Armour. Rosen used the big contract to mock the NCAA's nonprofit status on social media, saying, we're still amateurs, though. Gotta love nonprofits. Hashtag NCAA.
And my question with this, because obviously, like, for a player like Rosen who might have a chance to go to the NFL, or Deshaun Watson,
he's the seventh-rated prospect in the upcoming draft.
Right, so what happens to, like, I understand maybe he puts his all into football and just goes, just keep me eligible, I don't care about school or whatever, or I'll get my degree later when, you know, down the road. What happens to, like, the offensive lineman for, Auburn, who's not going to go to the NFL? Does that person lose out on their education as well? And what do they, like, I think those are the stories that need to be told here, because they're not getting paid.
Well, it depends on the school. All right, so I can tell you here, when it comes to the classroom, everybody's equal. Trace McSorley is expected to go out, work hard on the football field, get great grades. Sterling Jenkins is expected to go out, work hard in the classroom, and get great grades. That's the expectation. That's what they put in front. Now, learning is very much like player development. One of the tougher things for any coach, because coaches, you know, like anybody, they get impatient. They want, well, they'd like to have everybody come out and be awesome right away in the first day. But every player develops at their own rate. Well, it's the same story in the classroom. Every person in the classroom develops at their own rate. And sometimes it takes more of an adjustment time for others. Some people come in, they can knock it out in the classroom right away. Some people don't need to study, right? They frustrate the heck out of you because they don't need to. And then there are others, you know, and others have to study their brains out to get there. Being a college athlete, I don't care if it's football, women's gymnastics, whatever it happens to be, you need to develop really great time management skills. Your time management skills have to be top shelf. And you really need that. Because as he said, it's like trying to hold down two full-time jobs. That's why the summer sessions are so important. Those summer sessions in the off-season are so important to build up grades, GPAs, and things like that, because you can spend exponentially more time on your academics. You can take time for internships and things like that. That's why one area where a quarterback club, whenever I get a senior up there and they mention they're only taking like 3-6 credits, whatever, and there's snickers in the crowd, like, what the heck? Like, don't you realize they've done all the work? They've already done how many years of 12, 15 credits play football, 12, 15 credits play football. And because they've worked so hard and developed some collateral in the summer, a little pad, they can finally get to their fifth year, and then suddenly in that fall, they can ease it back a little bit. Like, they've already done the work. Hey, don't sit there and tell me how proud you are about academics at Penn State, then find out a guy that's already done the work and can now shave it down to 3-6 credits, whatever it is, and then snicker, like, really? Ha-ha, what? I don't want him sitting there needing 40 to graduate if he only needs 3. That means he's done the work. Sometimes people wonder what I think when I'm doing some of these events.
Could you imagine if you were allowed to say what you thought?
Well, but I'll sit there. I'll be standing up there and like, oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Okay, he's already done all the credits. Don't snicker at him. Okay, like, you know, like he's robbing Peter to pay Paul here. He's already paid the freight.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. All right. We will come back more in a moment. Neil Coulong on today's show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, bottom of the hour, and then Neil Coulong at Kras. After that, we're going to talk Steelers next half hour, Eagles in the third half hour of the show today. James Franklin tomorrow on the show.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coulong in a few moments to talk about the Steelers. Ed Kras next half hour to talk about the Eagles. Preseason openers coming up. Eagles get Green Bay. The Steelers get the Giants. All right. This day in sports history. 1900, in Boston, the first Davis Cup series began. The U.S. defeated Great Britain 3-0. You know, something I always admired about John McEnroe. John McEnroe always played Davis Cup. Always played for his country. 1903, Joe McGinty of the New York Giants pitched two complete games in one day, winning 6-1 and 4-3 over the Brooklyn Dodgers. Let's see. 1931, Bob Burke of the Washington Senators pitched a 5-0 no-hitter against the Red Sox. 1954, the Dodgers scored 13 runs in the eighth inning. They beat the Reds 20-7 at Ebbets Field. 1972, the Yankees signed a 30-year lease with the city of New York, which called for Yankee Stadium to be completely modernized in time for the 76 season. Doug DeCense of the California Angels hit 3 home runs in a game in 1982. He then hit 3 home runs against the Twins 5 days earlier. 1985, Major League Baseball players returned to work after a 2-day walkout. 25 years ago today, the Dream Team clinched the gold medal at Barcelona. They beat Croatia 117-85. They had to come up with a way to cover the, I believe Reebok made the medal ceremony warm-ups. Several of the pros were Nike, most notably Michael Jordan. They had to come up with a way to solve the problem to get them all out for the podium, and a good friend of mine, Tom McGrath, was a really important part of that, and they came up with the idea of draping American flags over the warm-up, which would cover the Reebok label. So Tom had interns go around the arena and get, how many players on the team? 12 American flags to do that. And some of them came from, all the flags came from the arena that people had brought to the arena that day. 1996, Eddie Murray of the Orioles moved into 15th place on the career home run list, his 494th. Last night, Mike Trout got his 1,000th career hit. On this day, 1996, Willie McGee, his 2,000th major league hit. Willie McGee has spent a pretty decent amount of time here in State College as a roving running instructor for the Cardinals. Well, that, you know, you have to teach them somehow, right?
Of course. And no, I mean, Willie McGee is a good teacher to have.
I mean, you know, what's a proper lead? What's a proper jump? How do you read a pitcher? I mean, a lot of things that go into it.
I mean, he constantly looked like he was crippling himself every time he swung the bat, but the guy could run. I'll give him that.
Oh, he could run. 1999, Wade Boggs' 3,000th career hit on this date. Major League Baseball salary, the minimum, went from $100,000 up to $300,000 in 2003. It's now, I believe it's $460,000. All right, let's talk football. Ed Kras next half hour to talk about the Eagles. This half hour, we talk about the Steelers. And with that, we welcome back Neil Kulong. Hello, Neil.
It's great to be back. Gotta love August.
Gotta love August. That means we're kicking into another gear. The Steelers get the Giants coming up to open things up. Will any of the starters play?
I highly doubt it. I wouldn't imagine. Really, this team's a largely veteran-based as it is, but they're not old. You know, they have enough experience and enough youth that they've built over the last couple of years that I think really they're not probably looking to fill a whole lot of positions. So with that, I think there's a, you know, not that there's a need for four preseason games anyway, but I think with where they are, they probably only need like maybe a game and a half to get a few spots finalized. So we're going to get a lot of the youngest guys who are out there. They'll run a lot of snaps. I think you'll see a lot of Landry Jones and Josh Dobbs this preseason. I don't think Ben needs to be out there for more than, you know, maybe a series or two just to justify the ticket sale for the home crowd. But other than that, there's not really a need to get many of them out there.
Le'Veon Bell's still out, yet there's a school of thought out there that in the end it's going to help him and it's going to help the Steelers because he won't have wear and tear from camp on him. How do you fall on that?
He usually doesn't have wear and tear on him. He's usually suspended. In this case, it's more that he, you know, it's nice for him from a physical sense, but at the same time, Le'Veon Bell's in incredible shape. He really is a remarkable athlete. I don't know how much wear and tear he's really getting from training camp, considering his age. And really, he's carried the ball a pretty good amount, but he hasn't played in a whole lot of games the last couple of years. So I think he's probably right where he would need to be anyway. If he was in camp, like most years, they'd probably spell him a pretty good amount as far as like the live scrimmages would go. But more than anything, I think what he needs is more the meetings and the communication with the rest of the offense. That's going to be the real value to him, not necessarily just the physical reps. But you know, they've had a kind of a tough time in camp so far of keeping running backs injured. So maybe he would have gotten a few more carries than he otherwise would have, but I don't think it's really going to matter either way. I think they know what they're getting with Bell. I think he knows enough about what they're doing. He'll be ready to go, and you know, probably a very similar manner to what he would have been if he was there.
Interesting. Eric Dickerson actually made a comment saying, you know, Bell really reminds me of me. And I'm trying to remember any time that Dickerson ever had a blitz pickup or caught a pass. But, I mean.
It's an interesting. I that's not the guy I'd go to in a comparison. But I can see why he wants to think that.
Yes, I can see why he wants to think that. I can understand that. But at least, I don't know if he means running style. I mean, but Dickerson was such a straight up and down running style. I don't see Bell as that kind of guy.
I wouldn't either. I think that's an odd comparison. Bell, the way I categorized Bell when he was coming out of Michigan State was a power back who didn't run with power.
Yeah.
He wanted to be much more elusive than he was. And really, he wasn't incredibly impressive his rookie year. It wasn't until he dropped 20 pounds and really started using the horizontal edge of the field that he became the monster that he is now. He was always a pretty good receiver. He just didn't have that speed, that quickness, that ability to cut the way that he does. It's certainly not taking anything away from Eric Dickerson. I didn't see him as that kind of a player, though. He wasn't as, I don't know if shifty is the right word, but he didn't cut nearly as hard or nearly as fast as Bell did. I'm not sure there really have been any of it that have it the way that he does.
I was going to say the next precise route Dickerson runs will be his first. T.J. Watt, Trent Jordan Watt, and Juju Smith-Schuster, how have they done so far?
Like from what we've seen of them, it's probably for Watt, it's probably about what we've expected. I don't see him being a high-end, high-contributing rookie for them. It's been disappointing to not have Juju Smith-Schuster out there. He's been hurt. That unfortunately is something that kind of comes with the conditioning side of the NFL that a lot of rookies, you know, kind of tend to overdo it right away, and they aren't really taking care of themselves the way that they need to. And you hope that he's going to recover and he's going to be able to participate in as much as camp as possible just to get him ready for the season. But we haven't seen enough of him, I don't think, yet to really make a judgment. And in this rookie class so far, I really think with the exception of Smith-Schuster and maybe possibly kind of an outside chance of James Conner, I'm not really sure how many of them are going to be actively participating in anything other than special teams. You know, that I think the first three guys are going to be, or first four, I should say, are probably going to be spot players if Sutton can get back on the field too. But by and large, I don't think they're going to get a whole lot of exposure because the team now is a bit deeper than it's been the last couple of years. I don't think they're really going to need them to play significant snaps the way many of the rookies in the past have.
It's been a very quiet, uninteresting camp. Would that be fair, and is that good?
It's you know, I was just talking to my wife about this. The weather has been so cool that it's almost like the news cycle is going with that. And you can imagine how excited my wife is to talk about these kinds of things. It's like we haven't really heard a whole lot. There hasn't been a fight. There hasn't been any real outstanding moments or anything. It's almost like it's just too cool. It's too cool out for them to really get fired up or agitated and, you know, kind of raise the stakes on the whole thing a little bit. The reporters don't seem to be as kind of angry with the readers as they are sometimes in their chats. Those always make for fun conversations. But by and large, yeah, it's been very nondescript. The story really just is that Bell isn't there, and that's a story that's not going to change. There are only so many different ways that you can write that, and when the guy isn't there, then, you know, you're not really going to have any other new angle to take on it. Otherwise, yeah, it's been dull, quiet, not real not real particularly inventive, which could be worse. He could be the Ravens. John Harbaugh snapped on a reporter today for asking the health status of their first round rookie. Another one they don't have. I think they have like 19 guys out or something. I don't even know how they're fielding practice right now. But you know, maybe no news is good for the Steelers.
Obviously, it's going to be another Landry Jones game coming up, along with, you mentioned, Josh Dobbs, and people will be excited to see the rookie only because they don't know him. What is it about Landry Jones that, in your opinion, where has he actually gotten better, but what just doesn't click with him?
I still kind of see the same issue that I had with him when he was coming out of college. He just really seems to take him too long to read where he wants to go with the ball.
Yeah.
And part of that, that's kind of the first thing you look at with the spread quarterback. Usually they have one read and they go with it. When he has multiple reads, there are things that he, you know, if he has a progression coming out from under center, does he have the rhythm down to you know, meter his footwork and stay on balance while making those progressions and picking up where you know, a blitz is coming from, where pressure is starting to build up. It just doesn't seem to me that he ever has been able to process all of those things at once. Now, don't get me wrong, I certainly couldn't do it. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. But
right.
After this long, you kind of hope that he has, you know, a little bit more, a little bit more speed of mind, if you will, if he's able to calculate all of those things and make a good decision. Now, he's looked fairly decent at times. He's looked pretty bad at times. He's, you know, and now he's a two-year, $2 million backup quarterback. I think that's probably about right for him. And they drafted Dobbs last year to see if they could save, you know, about $1.5 million next season on their primary backup quarterback. So, in that sense, it really is kind of a big preseason for perhaps the NFL's all-time leader in passing yards in the preseason for Landry Jones.
All-time passing yards preseason.
If anybody actually kept that stat, I really wonder where Jones would be. They've played him a ton the last couple of years. I mean, he got like, he was over like 150 snaps last preseason or something. And that's a ton.
Jim Sorgi's got to be up there.
Yep. You'd probably put him high on the list as well. He's an Illinois guy, right? Is that where he came from?
Purdue. No, I'm sorry, Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yes.
I was thinking about Curtis Painter. Because Peyton Manning hardly ever played in the preseason.
Nope, why would he?
In fact, here's a great
really need him to.
Here's a great stat. There was at one point in Manning's career, over a span of 28 preseason games, the Colts were 4-24.
That's good, I didn't know that.
Now, what span it is, what years, but that'd be what, a 7-year span?
Oh, yeah.
So 7-year span, probably in the prime of his career, they went 4-24 in the preseason.
That clearly means that Jim Sorgi is the least valuable player in NFL history.
It tells you the value of the guy he's replacing.
and that's his value. He brackets the value of Peyton Manning. He's that low end comparable.
In fact, I think yes, right. Wins above replacement war.
23 in this case.
I think that when Manning gets to Canton, Jim Sorgi should be the guy that introduces him.
Yep, that would only make sense. Or at the very least, be the introduction for the gold jacket the night before.
Something. Give him a roll. Give him a roll. What if anything, are you going to look at in the first game?
Probably nothing, to be honest with you.
I wish you would be more honest. I wish you'd be a little more honest on the show. I'm really concerned.
First game is more about getting your tailgate ready. You know,
exactly.
It's kind of like this is the one you're excited for because it's going to be the one perfect weather tailgate game. You know, this is the one you really want for that. And the fun's kind of over by the second quarter. Everything else kind of dies down. And scores probably 16-13.
I was kidding with somebody today. Eli Manning did not play in the first preseason game last year. I think they played him four series in the second game, and then they actually played him through the first series of the second half in the third game. I think it's important to kind of get a feel coming out of a locker room, you know, so at least you do it once. And then he didn't play at all in the fourth game. And I said, yeah, the third game, it's always the one to go to. And, like, when they're done with the first series, like, hey, I've seen enough. Let's go out to the parking lot.
Okay.
Hey.
We're out of here.
Yeah, good. We're done. I think we'll beat the traffic.
I think it's kind of interesting, though. This year, I wonder what they do with the second game and the third game. I wonder if that doesn't, might, you know, possibly flip around a little bit, just because you don't have the cut down to 75 anymore.
Right.
So it's not like this is the one last dress rehearsal for guys that, you know, might have one possible gasp at making the roster in that fourth preseason game. Now it's like, well, we're cutting everybody at the same time. So what is the value of that third game versus, say, the second game after you get that, you know, the coming out of the tunnel experience? Is that the better one to kind of put everybody in? Because then if an injury does happen, you've got 2 weeks until you're going to need them to start practicing for week one. I wonder if it doesn't shift a little bit.
I mean, you already have 26 of the 32 NFL teams have reduced prices on the preseason. The Giants, for example, their two preseason home games are half what a single game is for the regular season. So teams, I think, are starting to understand that. When do you think we see the transition to maybe only two preseason games?
I think it's coming pretty quick. I think that's exactly what it's doing. It's like, if they have to reduce prices to get people to go in the first place, then it's like, what's the point? We really don't need it. If anything, I would argue that what the NFL wants to do is try to leverage getting rid of preseason games in favor of another regular season game. That's the one, obviously, people will pay for, and that's, you know, the crux of the argument in the owner's mind is simply revenue. So if they're not going to make any because people just really aren't going to games to the point where they have to reduce prices by half, it sounds to me like that's an experiment more than anything else. Take one of the more storied franchises, the ones that, you know, that are better in attendance, and it, you know, talk them into cutting prices for the sake of, you know, running kind of a case study. Are people going to go if it's half price? If it is, then maybe they keep the preseason game. But you know that extra regular season game is going to come up at some point in the next CBA negotiations. They're going to want to get another game on the schedule if they can.
You mentioned CBA, so I'll mention three other initials. How much does CTE enter into a decision to go with an extra regular season game?
That's tough. It's tough. Based on that study, I would say almost to the point where you have to look at it at the issue holistically. If 111 out of 113 players that they studied have symptoms of CTE, they pretty much all have it. So what's another game doing? You know, you hate to look at it that way, but they can make that argument. And what the players are going to say then is, all right, well, let's you know, fix the, you know, the payout. Let's tack on a few extra percent into, you know, our cut of the revenue. And you know, maybe then we'll do it. But for me, it's more like, if CTE is going to be a consistent issue for players, it's not at all. It's not a midway kind of thing. One more game is not going to make them any worse. It's not going to save them either. They're in it already. They know that. If they don't want to do it, they wouldn't be playing. And I find it extremely unlikely that any one of them is not aware of this issue by now. I don't think it was even likely 10 years ago that they didn't know that there wasn't something going on with it. I couldn't imagine that anybody could argue with a straight face that one more game is a significant safety risk. It's a question of how much they're going to get paid for. If they get more to do it, they will do it.
Money. All right. Perfect. Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. Talk about the Eagles next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Thanks to Neil Coulong talking about the Steelers in this half hour. Ed Kraz, Bucks County Times, will join us in the next half hour to talk about how the Eagles camp has gone to this point. The Eagles open with the Green Bay Packers on Thursday night, while the
Steelers open with the Giants on Friday night. So we talk Steelers this half hour. We go with the Eagles next half hour. James Franklin on the show tomorrow. Get an update on how the Nittany Lions are going to this point. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.